Hello and welcome to Connecting Through Heritage, a podcast from the Leitrim County Council Heritage Project. In this series of podcasts, we're exploring the natural, built and cultural history of the county, and we're speaking to the Leitrim people who've made it their mission to celebrate it. Some are experts and others enthusiasts. In the case of this episode, they are practitioners, keeping Leitrim's musical heritage alive by performing it. Music has always been a cornerstone of Leitrim life, and both today and in years past, the county has produced some of Ireland's best players and singers. The late Ben Lennon remains a fiddle legend in Irish traditional music, while singer Eleanor Shanley, once of Dedannan, is a hugely successful artist in her own right. And of course, there's Thomas Moran, the Leitrim singer whose great talent was recorded by the collector Seamus Ennis. The work of our first guest continues the strong Leitrim musical tradition. Fionnuala Maxwell is a highly accomplished singer from Drumsna and has performed across the country, including with Dervish as part of the Leitrim Equation project. Since she was a child, she's had an interest in Leitrim music and has tirelessly worked to keep alive the songs of the county. She often finds songs in forgotten manuscripts or publications and gives them new life through her own interpretations. Her first experience with a Leitrim song was with perhaps the most famous of them all.
I began singing traditionally when I was about seven, I'd say. It all began at a Fla Ceoil in Drumsna, and it began with there being nobody in the competition. And my mam said to me, "Up you go, sing a song." I hadn't a notion what I was going to sing. I think I sang something like "Shawnee Nara Ro Her Egan Mucked She Some Bo Her." Very simple thing from school. And then the adjudicator said, "Why don't you learn?" And she mentioned, I think it was The Shores of Loch Bran. And I had never heard of the song. I was only seven at the time. And I went off to research this song and found out that my great aunt had sang it and my aunt had sang this song at one stage, and that it was a song from the locality. And my journey into traditional singing started from there.
Was your first experience seeing the songs performed, or was it through encountering a written record of them?
To be very honest, I think I was born at the wrong time, in that I missed the whole period in Leitrim where there were house dances and what they called Leitrim joins, they were actually called, where people joined together, and it was all about what you could do. Can you sing? Can you dance? It didn't matter if you were a great star or you had a beautiful voice. You still sang and you still did your piece as such. So I missed all of that. I missed the opportunities of hearing these songs being sung by, I suppose, the ordinary, everyday Leitrim voice in a setting where they could be passed along, that I'd hear them so often that I'd actually be able to learn them. I missed that time. There were people such as Michael O'Rourke, for example. He was the singing postman, they called him. My mother used to speak about him, but I never actually heard him sing in person. I've heard recordings of him. And Josephine McNamara was another lady from Ahavas, and she was singing these traditional songs too. She emigrated also. And I've only heard recordings also of her.
So would your mother and aunts have sung the songs themselves, or was it more something that they remembered from their youth?
Yeah, absolutely. They would have remembered people singing certain ones, but to be honest, they would have gone out of fashion. In their time, those type of songs would have been out of fashion. And what I mean by that is there was a time, probably those kind of 50s, 60s onwards time, that I think these songs, they reminded people of hard times, of poverty, of a certain ignorance maybe that the songs depicted, that people just didn't want to remember. They wanted to leave it where it was and let the past be the past. Whereas now I think there's a complete turnaround to let's be proud of who we were and how we overcame all of that, and to remember that there are still hard times for people, and that the emotion is then, you know, what's important there to be able to connect with.
Was it easy to find a singing tradition in Leitrim when you first started your work?
It wasn't easy to find the culture, because the actual culture had gone, had disappeared. So the culture of traditional singing like that, where it was somebody maybe even singing into a corner or singing in a room, in a kitchen, or at a singing session, It had gone from the area. You know, even before that, there were recordings made by Seamus Ennis, for example, of Thomas Mourne, who was a ballad singer from outside of Mohill, and also of the travelling singer. He was John Riley, John Jack O'Riley, who was, he was actually born in Carrick and Shannon. They were recorded, but mostly when you listen to those ballads, they were child ballads or broadside ballads that were sold. Those ballads would have originated really in England, or, you know, they would have travelled England, Scotland, kind of the English speaking world. And I think the reason why they were recorded and made so much of was to actually record the fact that these ballads had travelled. And while they have great relevance and importance to our tradition, I was really on a mission to find the ballads that reflected our county, I suppose, our countryside, our folklore. That was my mission then, to go and find those lesser known ones that I knew for a fact were there, because through looking at various sources, and in particular what has become very useful have been the Dukas records of the 1930s, where you would see written down that certain ballads were written. You would see some lyrics. Sometimes all you would see is a child writing at that stage. There was a famous ballad writer beside me, and he wrote, and they might mention three songs, but those songs I wouldn't have found and could never find them again. So obviously they had gone, they disappeared. So there was that sense of, yes, there were definitely songs here. There were songs from the 1798 times. There were songs from 1916, songs from the 1920s and so on. That, okay, from then on, they were probably recorded, but before that, a lot of it was definitely lost. So it's unbelievable, actually, there's still the collections of stuff that are out there that are still being found in people's attics and so on.
What do you think is the natural habitat for these songs?
Oh, definitely. I always say this when I'm asked to sing a song on a stage and you've got the lights kind of beaming into your face and you feel like a rabbit caught in headlights, if you like. I'm sure that's why Christy Moore sweats and closes his eyes, because this was not the natural territory for those traditional songs. Those songs were made to be sung on their own, with somebody's natural voice. A lot of these people who sang them would not consider themselves singers. They sang facing a corner. They didn't want to be on stage. So therefore, when you put somebody on a stage singing these songs, sometimes it can be quite frightening in a way, because you feel like the story that you're telling is something that's kind of personal. And to try and get that across to an audience can be a bit frightening at times. You wonder, do they get it? You wonder, does it carry as much as it would carry within that small group of people who maybe know what you're singing about, know what the story is, and appreciate that song for what it actually is.
Can you tell us how you source a song from Leitrim's history and put the pieces of the puzzle together so that it can be performed?
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example. I'll sing a song for you, but I'll just tell you a little bit about it. Look, various ways. Here's one particular source. When I was looking for songs a couple of years back, I was looking at the Gaelic American newspaper, which obviously had its function, and its function was to emphasise or to empathise, I suppose, with the immigrants who had come from Ireland. So with the Irish who were finding their way over there. And many times lyrics of poems and ballads and so on were written in these. And I found one of these lyrics that were written by a man called Dickinson. And what drew me to it was the fact that, first of all, Seamus MacDiarmid, who was a brother of Sean MacDiarmid, he had edited these lyrics. So I thought, OK, there's a definite link. And when I looked at the title, it's called The Hills of Leitrim. The hills, that's what Leitrim is for me. It's those little hills rolling up and down. And growing up, my grandparents lived down the hill from us, and my next neighbours lived up the hill from us, and my granduncle, they lived up another further hill, and so on. So it all seemed to be to do with I'm going up to somewhere or down to somewhere. And this ballad, for me, it's a ballad of emigration. I just found the sentiment in it was just, you know, it was just so catching, so moving. And that whole idea of life was tough here, but when they left, they looked back and they gloried in what it actually was, even though it was tough. So, as I said, the song is called The Little Hills of Leitrim. So the first verse of this, for me, this again caught me, because it just said to me, this person is looking back on a harsh situation that they came from, but looking back thinking it's better than the situation that I'm in now. My attic room is cold and grey above the narrow street, and up the winding stair there comes no sound of friendly feet.
I'm dreaming of old voices, and I think I smell the peat in a house among the little hills of Leitrim.
So that first verse, the attic room, like, it's cold, it's grey, it's not great, it's not the land of milk and honey, it's not what they dreamed of. It's a back street, it's the narrow street, and the stairs are winding. And it seems like it's not just the actual physical stairs. To me, it feels like it's also the metaphorical stairs that are winding, and there's nobody coming with those friendly feet to offer them something. But he's dreaming of old voices, and the peat, that was really important within Leitrim. In fact, a lot of the houses smelled that kind of burning, that peat. The chimneys weren't well built in a lot of cases, and you had a lot of one or two roomed houses. But he's remembering this very fondly. He's not thinking of the harsh times that he has left. And the second verse,
'tis many a weary year since last I saw my country's skies, and heard across the waste of bog the mournful plover's cries. But there beneath the kindly sod my heart deep buried lies, in a grave among the little hills of Leitrim.
And again, the weary years, all those years, and to think you're under the same sky, but yet you're mourning for what you've left behind. But what was it? A waste of bog. And he talks about the plover, the plover's cries, which would not have been a celebrated thing. Plovers were well-known birds for being in that kind of bogland, if you like. So they weren't a sign of richness. They were a sign of poverty. And the kindly sod. So now the sod that he probably gave out about when he was in Ireland has become kindly. But of course, it's because his heart is deep buried there, because his ancestors, probably his mother, his parents, have passed away and he hasn't got back to see them. And he goes on in the next verse to speak about that, and to speak about how proud he used to be to accompany his mother to the fair.
Ah, Cushla, but you were a queen of beauty, sweet and rare. And I was proudest boy of all beside you at the fair. I close my eyes and see you coming down the passway there, from the farm among the little hills of Leitrim.
So again, the whole of Cushla, that was, you know, a terminology that would be used quite often here as well. This thing of, like, I bet you he never told his mother when he was actually in Ireland that she was a queen of beauty, sweet and rare. So it was only when people left and looked back that they felt maybe able to, voice these kind of sentiments. So he closes eyes, he sees her coming down the pathway. Again, the pathways, because the roads, they weren't really road worthy, if you like, or traffic worthy. They were passes, and the farms were all dotted among those hills of Leitrim, and very small farms as well at the time. And the next verse goes on to the kind of work that was important there. If you've ever heard of the mehel. So the mehel was where everybody joined in. So the neighbours would come and do your hay today, and tomorrow then you'd go and you'd do the next person's. Or if you were putting up a shed, you had a mehel. The neighbours came and they all helped out and put it together. So it was a joining of work. There was no payment involved. It was paying back the favour, if you like. And this reminded me of that idea, but also of the fact that when everything was over, that they would dance on the road, and they would have blind Mike, as they mention in these lyrics, playing the tune. And now, look at that, probably happened very seldom, but of course he's remembering the good times when he's looking back on his childhood.
I mind the summer evenings when the scythe was put away, and all the boys and girls came in from saving of the hay, and dancing in the road itself to tunes blind Mike would play, and the moonlight shining on the hills of Leitrim. I'm toiling in the stranger's land with ne'er a friendly face. A stranger to their look on me, a man of foreign race. But though my body's toiling, faith, my heart's not in this place. 'Tis back among the little hills of Leitrim.
And that's it. He goes back then to the first verse again, just to reiterate the loss. And as you can hear, it's a story that's universal, not just for Leitrim people, for a lot of Irish, rural Irish people anyway in particular, but I think particularly resounds with the people I've talked to, even of, say, older than my parents' generation even, will say that's the one thing that they remember is the emigration and their parents crying, usually at the train stations because they didn't travel any further than that. And sometimes they didn't even leave the house. They didn't want that goodbye and that crying. They stayed at home, and after that join, after that kind of American wake, they let them go because they wanted to remember the happy times, or perhaps they just didn't want them to see them crying.
So you're singing a song many, many years after it was written, and you're performing it a long way from where it was originally composed. What do you bring to it?
Again, what I'm trying to do is give it legs, if you like. So to give that song a way of getting out there, to give not just the actual song. Again, I always go back to the thing of the story being so important. So I feel that the hills of Leitrim I can identify with. That's where I was brought up. So the hills of Leitrim. So I can see that. I can feel pain. I can feel loss, loneliness. You know, I can feel all those emotions. So I feel the feelings, they are universal. And I think that that's something that, you know, anybody who can feel those things and have a bit of integrity about them, that they can sing this song. They can bring that sense of emotion to it. And why not, if it's something that, as well as saying this is our history, if it's something that people can learn from, again, to go back to that whole idea of passing on these songs. I do have my own younger singer circles, so in my singing classes as such, and if they can identify with the song and an area and see what has happened, it's a learning for them. They won't have been touched, most of them, by emigration and by that great sense of sadness or loneliness, but doesn't it give them appreciation for what has gone before them, what has made the area that they live in? So for me, that's what I can bring to that song, and by putting the air to it, I can bring it to an audience that it would never have gone to. It would have remained on the dusty shelves of some library in New York.
That was Leitrim singer Fionnuala Maxwell. In the early 1960s, a carpenter found a musical manuscript in the roof of a pub in Longford. He was a musician himself, and he kept it, thinking that it might be valuable. Well, we're lucky he did. The manuscript is a kind of musical fossil, showing the origins of a fiddle tradition in Leitrim and Longford that musicians continue to draw upon today. Conor Ward is a fiddler who himself was raised in this style. He lives in Coote Hall and has spent many years studying the manuscript to trace the evolution of fiddle playing in the area over two centuries. I started by asking him about his first introduction to the music of Leitrim.
I was a member of a local ceilidh band in Gorletra, County Leitrim, and the trainer of that ceilidh band was Father John Quinn. He was a priest from Longford who was based at the time in Leitrim. And he'd been training bands in Longford since, I think, about the 1960s, early 1960s. And then when he moved to Gorletra in 1987, he started ceilidh bands. Father Quinn had a great interest, and still does have a great interest, in what the local music is of Longford and of the county of Leitrim. I suppose when we would have played in competitions, Father Quinn's ethos was always that we played local music. So I suppose that was my first kind of immersion into local music.
What sort of an impression did the music make on you at the time?
I'll be quite honest. I mean, when you're young, you don't take it in really. When you join something like that, you just want to play tunes and you just want to enter into competitions and win. When, like, you know, Father Quinn was telling us, you know, this tune comes from a certain local, like, you know, collection, or this is a lovely tune that he found in a different, you know, collection from Leitrim or Longford. Like, you're not really kind of, you know, taking it all in. It's only really when you get a bit older that you start to take notice of the beautiful music that he had, you know, given us. And I suppose for me, really what happened was that I was doing my accountancy exams in Dublin at the time in 2012, and I just finished them. And he contacted me because the band had just finished, but he just asked me would I mind having a look at some of the old manuscripts that he had found in the two counties of Leitrim and Longford since the 1960s, and maybe I could do some sort of a study on them. And he showed me one of the manuscripts, which was the oldest one that he had located, and this was a real jewel in the crown, as they call it. It was transcribed pre-famine between 1844 and 1846. It was transcribed by a fiddle player from North Longford called Thomas Kiernan. He transcribed it while he was teaching a student at that time. And that particular manuscript was found in the roof of a pub in Abishruel, which is at the very bottom of South Longford, by a carpenter, Pierce Butler, in the early 1960s. And fortunately enough, Pierce Butler, he was a carpenter fixing the roof, but he was also a fiddle player, and he knew the value of this document. He looked through it and he could see the dates on it, the 1844 and 1845, 1846, and he saw the names. He brought it home anyway and he kept it, and then he met Father Quinn years later and he gave it to him. And then so from that, Father Quinn would have introduced those tunes back into the region. He would have taken tunes out of that old like document, and we would have played some of them in the bands. So that was the manuscript that I started to kind of study. I had a look at it and I decided that I could probably do a master's just on that one like document.
When you talk about a document, what does this contain? Is there one song? Is there a number of songs? Were there lyrics?
Well, there's a number of components, but it started out as a manuscript. So it would have had, like, you know, blank pages that were pre-staffed with kind of, you know, the lines for actual music. So I presume that the student would have bought that kind of manuscript when he was starting to learn music. So from that, you can see that Kiernan was actually writing in the tunes that he was teaching Leonard. That was his pupil. And he dates them as he's going along. And you can see from the dates, like, that Kiernan must have stayed in the house for a month. Now, this happened to be a local tavern at the time, so Kiernan may have been playing music in the tavern and also teaching this boy the house. And then the student Leonard, after Kiernan stopped teaching him, he added more parts to the actual manuscript, and he stitched it together with a leather-bound cover. And he must have put it up in the attic at some stage before he died in 1886. So between 1886 and 1964, I think, was when Pierce Butler found it, that manuscript probably lay in the attic of that pub.
So what does Thomas Kiernan have to do with the music of Leitrim?
So Kiernan spread fiddle music all over South Leitrim and Longford. He was the first to kind of introduce the fiddle. And like that would have been common all over Ireland. Like there were fiddle masters, as we call them. There were these, you know, travelling fiddle teachers who would have had their own range, you know, their own region where they taught. So Kiernan's, it seems, was roughly kind of the border of South Leitrim, all of Longford, and possibly, for we know, probably on the other borders, of the, you know, where Longford is, Cavan and Westmeath as well. So yeah, so Kiernan would have taught from probably 1830s onwards. And then you find is that from about the 1850s onwards, 1860s, a number of his students started to teach as well. And local groups or local kind of clusters within this greater region, he emerged. And then you move over to South Leitrim. So Kiernan taught Peter Kennedy of Ballinamore. And Peter Kennedy was born around 1822. So then Kennedy, I suppose, he started then his own kind of, you know, cluster of a fiddle teaching in Ballinamore. He would have like spread the music further than Kiernan's range. He would have had students in his area. And I suppose, just to go back on a crucial thing of Kiernan's, was that although there was like fiddle masters all over Ireland, one of the key differences between them and Kiernan was that Kiernan taught by a note, and whereas a lot of the other fiddle masters might have taught just by ear. And of course, the fortunate thing about that is that you have these actual manuscripts kept, because all the students and teachers further down the line, they also taught by actual note. So then over the years, all these manuscripts, you know, some of them happened to survive to the actual present day. We have actual manuscripts belonging then to students of like Kennedy's. That's kind of a cluster that kind of emerged at the end of the 19th century.
Is Kiernan's manuscript different from other manuscripts found from the same era?
Yeah, I suppose what makes it quite different is that there were other like collectors, you know, kind of in Ireland at the time, who were travelling around Ireland trying to collect music from the different musicians. However, what was different about those collections was that they were looking for a particular type of music. So when they were looking for music in around at the same time in the 1840s, they were looking for what the older tunes had, what the old music was of older Ireland. But they didn't want the kind of new music that Kiernan was playing, like these waltzes and quadrilles and hornpipes coming in from England, and you had reels coming from Scotland. That these other collectors were only kind of interested in what was older material and going back 50, 100 years. So what's different about Kiernan's manuscript is that it was written in real time. So he wrote it while he was teaching his pupil. So he wrote down what they were actually playing. It's a real kind of life fossil, if you call it a music fossil, from that period in the 1840s. It gives you a good marker, a good indication of the type of music that the musicians were playing in Longford and Leitrim. And possibly then, obviously then from that, it is likely that in other regions in Ireland, they were playing the same music. It's just that we don't have the same evidence.
Does Kiernan's work and the work of his students constitute a distinct Leitrim musical culture?
From that early manuscript, we were quite fortunate through Father Quinn and myself later that we discovered more and more of these fiddle manuscripts from all over the region. And what's great about them was that they were kind of spread out over the kind of 150 years. So from the first one in 1844, we found another manuscript of Kiernan's pupils in the 1870. Then we won some 1890, 1910, 1930, 1950. So we have a good idea of how the music evolved from the 1840s right up to the 1970s, say, from these actual manuscripts, because you can study how the music changed over time. So to answer your question is that there was two different things happened. What I found in my study was that the music evolved quite rapidly, which was something I didn't know prior to doing the study. I just thought the music that we play today, your Irish jigs and reels, was what was played 150 years ago, and it's not. What Kiernan was playing back then was completely different. But I suppose, like now, Kiernan of that era, they were interested in playing what was current and what was popular. So in Kiernan's time, it was these dances, it was the quadrilles and the waltzes. Whereas later on, other dances were kind of introduced to Ireland, like the polka, and they became popular. The Scottish reels became very, very popular during Kiernan's time, and they have survived to this day. So while the music changed kind of rapidly, what I found in my study was that Kiernan's teaching methods didn't, though. And there was a few techniques of Kiernan's that survived through the 150 years. Two of them in particular was a bowing technique that we call slur and cut. And that technique has been found in all of the manuscripts, the whole way up. And even like me, when I was learning the fiddle myself, I would have been taught that actual technique. It was made clear to me that this was important to the region. And so that was the first of Kiernan's technique that had survived. The second one was called a prelude, which was just these kind of practice pieces that Kiernan would have played before playing a tune. Because you know tunes are in different keys. If a tune was in a different key to the prior tune, you just play this little kind of prelude just to get used to what the kind of notes were, where to place your fingers just before playing the tune. Quite amazingly, these preludes survived the whole way up, but they kind of changed too. You can see by 100 years later, like they're not quite what they were 100 years earlier. They're a little bit different, but they're still the same exercise. So that was quite interesting to see, was the kind of difference in the kind of evolution of two areas, whereas the kind of music changed rapidly, the techniques didn't.
Can you hear the evidence of these teaching methods when you listen to the music?
Well, I suppose, like the bowing technique would be how you would kind of phrase a tune. There are fiddle players that were recorded in the 1960s by Father Quinn. And these were the older fiddle players. Like, there's one fiddle player, Michael Francis McNerney. He was from Fostra in Dromard in County Longford. And Michael Francis was born in 1893. Father Quinn taped him in 1973. So at that stage, he was a very old man. But he still had the techniques from that Kiernan era. And you can hear that in his actual music. And when you analyse it, when you transcribe the tunes from the recordings onto paper, you can see the same techniques are there that Kiernan would have taught. And even some of the tunes that Kiernan taught from the 1840s, this fiddle player was still playing in the 1970s.
Does the legacy of Thomas Kiernan and his students still exist in music played in Leitrim today?
Yeah, because lucky enough, as I said, through the Cayley bands and mainly through Father Quinn, You know, he has, since he's been training ceilidh bands for 50 years, and also, like, he was a fiddle teacher as well. He was always trying to, like, reintroduce this music from the region, every opportunity. So you can imagine over 50 years, and all those ceilidh bands and all those students, this local music has been reintroduced across the region again. The music has been played again, and it's gone, like, further afield. It's now played all over Ireland. You'll often hear tunes and you'll go, well, that's our tune from our region. Like sometimes when we were playing in the bands, in the competitions, other bands would like actually pick up the tunes that we were playing and you'd hear them being played next year at the following FLA.
Why do you think it's important to preserve this music?
It comes back to what I was taught by like Father Quinn and the ceilidh bands, like that this ethos of this is where you're from. It's like anything, you know, whether it's, you know, sport or music or culture. This was our music. This is what the old fiddle players and the old, you know, all the old musicians played back 150 years. And there was some great music that they played that was lost in the last 100 years with the kind of changing of like music as it happens. It's so important that we keep alive this old local music and that we teach it to the next generations. And that's what I do in my own teaching now. You know, I ensure that all my students, you know, that they're aware of this older music and that they learn this music again and that this is carried on to the next generation. And the same with the techniques that Kiernan would have taught. You know, it's trying to make sure that those special fiddle techniques, that they like survive, because that's what's important to us. So that's what's crucial in these kind of collections. It's not just a study. It's bringing it back into the present and hoping that it will like survive into the future.
Well, there's no better way to learn about the music than by hearing it. At the end of the interview, Connor offers to play us out with a tune by Alex Sutherland, a second-generation Kiernan pupil, or a musical grandson, as Connor puts it. And that's it for this episode of Connecting Through Heritage. If you've enjoyed this podcast, have a listen to the other episodes in the series. You'll find them by searching Connecting Through Heritage on the Leitrim County Council website. You can also find the series wherever you get your podcasts. Connecting Through Heritage is a Leitrim County Council heritage project funded by the Heritage Council. It was produced by me, Tom Rosengrave, for One Little Studio.